As you know, we had a very busy programme last Monday with the death of the Pope. We were supposed to broadcast a special Mooney Goes Wild from 9 until 11. And we had teams of people everywhere, including Aina, who was at Photo Wildlife Park. I think you must have caught a little cold when you were down there, Aina. You sound like you did.
There's nothing wrong with you. I'm grand.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
You sound even deeper than you normally do.
Oh, that's my new voice, Derek. Well, I hope you like it.
Beautiful, Aina, beautiful. Now, you were there for a reason, and we'll come to that in a moment. But last Monday was World Curlew Day, and that's why you were at Photo Wildlife Park, looking at a project called Head Starting. Niall, very briefly, a pen picture of what head starting is.
So in very simple terms, head starting is giving the young curlews a head start in life. That's what it's about. The curlew, as we've discussed many times on the programme, is one of Ireland's most threatened bird species. The populations have become very fragmented, and it's got to a stage there are so few now that predators particularly can have a big impact on the clutches of eggs. They'll often kill the eggs or the chicks at an early stage. Back when we had loads of curlews, that wasn't a problem. Now there are so few, it has a major impact. So head starting under this Curlew EIP, this European Innovation Partnership, what that's about is it's literally going out, trained researchers under licence, collecting these eggs from some of the nests that are under threat or not likely to survive, bringing them to Photo where they're placed in incubators, and then those birds are actually hand-reared for the first part of their lives, and then when they're old enough to be returned back into the wild, they do that, and that's what gives them that head start in life.
And that's what you were at Photo Wildlife Park to see last Monday, Aina.
That's right, Derek, and I see it I did. I met Declan O'Donovan, who is the person in charge of all of that. I met Jess, who works with him, and he brought me and showed me chapter and verse, and I asked him all the hard questions about where he got the eggs and was this a bad thing for the curlew and everything else. It was great. All the incubators, they're ready to go. He had little baby quails who were going to be teaching the curlew how to eat, and eventually then they were all going to be released when they could fly. They weren't going back to Mammy and Daddy, obviously, because Mammy and Daddy would have laid a new clutch of eggs,
right,
and would be rearing a second batch. But these ones would be ready to go, and this is about the fourth year of it now. So this year will be the first year they'll know has it been effective, because it takes 4 years for curlews to get to the breeding stage in their lives. So I was there in situ at Photo Wildlife Park speaking to Declan O'Donovan.
The head start in the name suggests what it actually is. It's giving the birds an extra chance to in survival. So we'll take, say, eggs from the wild, we'll take them back to Photo Wildlife Park, we'll incubate them, we will then rear them on a certain stage before we then release them back into the wild.
Right, so that's it in a nutshell. So we were inside earlier on looking at the incubators. Mm-hmm. Now it's early, it's obviously still the end of April, and you haven't got any eggs there yet. But like the waiting for the baby, like the maternity quarters, you have it already. So now, where are you going to get the eggs and how will you get them?
We're one part of a larger project, the Breeding Weather EIP. In the field, we have ornithologists and consultants out there at the moment looking at the breeding, the waders and the other species, particularly the curlew, to see where they're nesting and to try and protect them. So any nests that they believe are vulnerable or at risk, they will then notify us that there is, say, one clutch of four eggs, and we will travel up to a central location in Ireland and we'll collect the eggs from them. We will then bring them down to our incubation rooms here in Photo Wildlife Park.
Great. So then it's the vulnerable places you're going, the places where the curlew are in trouble. Now, do you take one egg? Do you take two eggs? I mean, how does the actual thing happen?
So what happens is the nest protection officers will find the nest. They will identify that it is a vulnerable nest. And the normal sort of breeding strategy for a lot of birds is if they lose the first clutch of eggs, they will go down and they will lay a second clutch immediately afterwards. So by removing the first clutch of eggs, and it's usually four for a curlew, then it doesn't really affect them too terribly much, because they will lay a second clutch short time afterwards.
So what would have been the predator that was going to eat the eggs in the first place?
So it could be a number of predators. Generally, it's hooded crows or foxes in particular, and that they'd be the two main predators.
So then if the curlew goes back to lay more eggs, won't the hooded crow go, aha, and grab them again? So how do they manage not to happen?
Well, to avoid the predators actually picking up that there was a nest there previously, the original nest is taken away as well, so that the female has to go and make a new nest, completely new nest. And they'll do this without any issues in that. So they'll make a new nest in a different location. So any predator waiting for the second second layer of eggs, they're not going to find anything.
So that's how you outsmart those. Now, meanwhile, you've gone off now like a flying column. And how do you bring the eggs back from? Because it's not in Forty you're getting the eggs. It's up the country or down the country someplace. So how do you manage to bring them back while they're still warm and not make a bags of it?
So what we have is inside in our incubation room, we have what we call a grab box, and it's got portable incubators, and they run off the battery in the car. So as soon as we leave Forty, we will plug them in. So they'll be coming up to the correct temperature as we're travelling up the country to collect the eggs. As soon as we collect them, then they go directly into the eggs. And likewise, the nest protection officers who have been collecting them initially, they will put them in portable incubators as well, so the temperature doesn't drop.
So you meet them halfway, they have them already in the portable incubators, a quick swap into yours and straight back here to Forty.
Yeah, that's correct.
It's really busy here today. Look at all these tractors coming and going.
It's a working area, and this bank holidays and Easter doesn't really affect us. We still have to look after everything here.
I can imagine that you do. Yeah. So anyway, meanwhile, this is on cue. Here's your car coming back with your eggs in it, and you're going to bring them into the place I was in earlier on, looking at where the incubators are. We'll just let the tractor go past now for a moment. Yeah.
Oh, be careful there now, Andy. We don't want to lose you.
Right, you've come back now with the eggs. You have them nice and hot from, you got them straight in, and you have these incubators. I was looking at them, and they're like a box with four troughs in them, like four rocky things, and lights and heat and all of the rest of it. So it's really important that what you put them into is equivalent to what the eggs would be under the curlew. So what temperature do you run it at?
We run the temperature, the incubators, at 37.5, but as soon as we get them into the incubation room, we do a physical check on the eggs as well. So we check that there's no cracks on them, that the eggs are clean, that they look okay. So we'll take weights from them as well and different other measurements. And we use that to calculate weight loss in the egg, which is very important during the incubation period.
And will the incubation have started? Of course, it'll depend on when the eggs were laid. But is there any way you can know how far on the eggs are? I mean, is there any? In the olden days, people used to hold things up against candles if they got the hens laying out to see where the eggs, what condition they were in. Is there a modern way of doing that now?
Yeah, it's the exact same technique, except we don't run the risk of burning our fingers on the flame and that. So what we have is a high-powered light, which we put underneath the egg, just exactly the same way as you described for the old ways of doing it. And we will look up into the egg, and we can tell by the colour of the egg, the shape of the air sac and that in the egg, how old that egg is. And we've a fair idea of the incubation period from that point, and we're pretty accurate at doing that as well.
And will you know if one of them is a glugger?
Absolutely. If you've got three with embryos inside net and there's one clear, He doesn't go in.
He doesn't go in. No. So now you've put them in now, and there they are. And in the real world under the curlew, there they are. And the curlew presumably is, how long would she be hatching them out?
About 28 days.
So the curlew has to go off and feed in between the times. So she leaves them and comes back. Do you turn off and turn on the incubator to pretend you're a curlew going away? Or how do you actually manage that?
We can do. In our incubators, there is what they call a cooling period that we can set on the controls of the incubator. So we can drop off the temperature so that it turns the heating element off for, say, half an hour every day. And then it'll power it back on, similar to mimic what happens in the wild when the hen gets off the eggs.
So after 28 days from whenever they were laying, you've calculated that, the big day comes. And does it happen in the middle of the night, like the big cows always calf and no one's there? Or does it happen quickly? Or how do you know it's going to happen at all?
So, again, we're monitoring the eggs, and we have a fair idea when they're due to hatch. And this is all recorded, you know, and we're doing daily weight losses and things like that. So we have a fair idea when the egg is going to hatch. We also can put the light on it again, and we can see the chick breaking through the outside of the egg when it's ready to come out. And what we'll do then is we'll move them, maybe a day or two before, we'll move them into a higher humidity incubator. And the higher humidity means that they won't get stuck to the shell as they're coming out, and then they hatch nice and easily.
And is that why you roll them over then in those roly things? Yeah. Do you rock or do you roll?
Well, that's a very good question. We prefer rocking ourselves.
Rock from side to side, yeah, rather than turning the eggs over.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So in the wild, the hen bird will actually turn the eggs herself. And some people roll the egg for the first 10 days. The incubator will roll it along its flat line. And some people rock it from left to right.
And why is this actually necessary?
It's to stop the embryo from sticking to the side of the shell. If you leave it on its just flat all the time, the chances are that the embryo will actually stick and it won't hatch out properly.
So it's just to keep it always in the middle so that it's growing.
Exactly. And it's what the hen bird does herself as well.
Right. So then, yeah, you have them all then. I mean, looking at these curlew's eggs, they're gorgeous big bottoms on them and very narrow pointy tops, and in the nest they would have all the pointy tops in the inside and the big fat bit on the outside. So do you put them all together like that after a while, or do you leave them on the rockers by themselves?
No, well, they'll always be in contact with each other. They'll always have some form of contact, and we feel that it's important. And you can actually, as the chick develops, you can hear them chirping to each egg, talking to them, to another. And what we'll do coming up to the hatching period, we'll pop them on a flat bed base, and we'll have all the eggs in contact with each other, and the vibration of one will usually start, and it sort of synchronizes the whole hatch process, and we generally find that they all come out relatively.
So one goes, they all go.
That's what we like.
And now when they come out, then, you know, are they like blackbirds, all bare and baldy, and they can't move, or are they like day-old chicks and can run around? I presume they're like the latter, like the day-old chicks.
They're just like the day-old chicks. They take about maybe 12, 24 hours to actually dry out fully. So what we'll do is we'll move them from our hatcher incubator into what we call our brooder, which is just a high, an incubator running at about 37 degrees with no humidity inside. And it helps dry them out and leaves them strengthen up before we put them into to start feeding.
So that's it. So then they're like that and they can move. And then do you move them down then? Because you were showing me a second place. They're like big white bats for all the world. Yep. And we were looking in at those. And it looked to me, it was like that grass, pretend grass you have when you play football. What's that called?
That's the AstroTurf.
Is that what they are, sitting on AstroTurf?
Yeah, because it mimics again a lot of the environment that they'll come in, the hard tussocky grass from the bogs and the moorland and that. So it also helps keep air coming underneath their feet, which is very important when they're in these sort of smaller areas than that.
But when, and then they know how to feed. I mean, you don't have to teach them how to feed or anything, do you?
Well, we're very fortunate, and you might have seen earlier that we have small little quail eggs, which we use to help train our staff learn how the different incubation techniques from it. But also those hatched chicks play a very, very important role, because if the curlew don't know how to eat, and what we'll do is we'll put some of these small quail in with them, and their natural instinct is go down on the pick. The curlew chick will then learn from them, say, ah, I know how to eat, and they will follow, and they will start picking the food at the same time. And it's really good to train the curlew how to eat.
And do you have to keep out of their way in case they think you're a mammy curlew? Do they imprint on the first thing they see?
We're lucky that the curlew don't, but we do, wherever possible, we have very, very little contact with them. And just to protect from that.
Okay, so they're now in the bath, running around on the AstroTurf, playing football and having a great time. So how long do you keep them there?
We'll keep them there from about 5 to 10 days maximum. And then we have another location down at the other end of the wildlife park.
So they leave the shed altogether where it's nice and warm and controlled. And you put them out in the rain and the wind and the noise.
That's a big bad world. They're put out there very, very early on in life to get them used to that. Because remember, these are wild birds that are going back into the wild. So we need to harden them up as quickly as possible so that our work with them stops and then they go back out into the wild.
So you have them outside now and they're acclimatised, so you'll go to let them back into the wild. Are you going to ring them or mark them in any way so they'll never be able to find them again? I presume you do. So can you tell me about that?
We don't do the ringing ourselves. Again, as I said, we're part of the Breeding the Weather EIP project, and that's, so there's a lot of other stakeholders involved. So the National Parks and Wildlife will come down, and they have trained ringers who will come down, and they will put the rings and the tags onto the birds. And when we get the eggs eggs in, we put a particular code on the egg. So we can trace that that egg right up to the adult bird because they're all linked together. So whatever rings or tags are put onto them by National Parks and Wildlife, we can go back. If you see that bird out on the coast, we can tell you the weight of that egg when it came back in.
And you know it came from a particular clutch and it had three brothers and sisters. You don't sex them, I presume.
No.
And then that's their four all together, and they'll have the same colour but just a different number, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah. Okay, so now they have their rings on and they're adorned with everything, coloured ones, things they can see from a distance. Now, how long have you been doing this project here?
We've been doing this, working with the curlew since 2022.
Right. And how long does it take them to come to be old enough to breed in their own turn?
It takes about maybe 3 years before they'll start coming back into the breeding areas.
So we haven't found any ones that you have ringed so far because you wouldn't expect it to. They're too young.
They're too young. So a lot of the non-breeding birds stay out on the coast or in sort of isolated areas. So we wouldn't see them coming back into the breeding grounds. What we would hope to see is either this year or next year, certainly a return of some of the head-started birds that we released.
So just to finally then say, you've the rings on them, all good. If this one came from Kerry or that one came from Mayo or that one came from the Midlands, they're the areas to which you have been bringing them back up to this.
That's correct.
So then they're there for another while before the great day comes when they're ushered into the wild altogether. So how long would they be there now in those pens?
We hope to release them at about 60 days old, maybe 60 to 70 days old. And what happens then is the side of the pen will be dropped down and the birds will slowly walk out. And then they will have had lots of time to have a look around their area, get used to what's their potential feeding sites, other birds that might be in the area, the sounds and that. So they'll be used to all of that. And so when we just drop the sides of the pens, they should just seamlessly meld into the...
And they don't all rush off in one fell swoop. It takes them a while to go, I suppose, because why would you be leaving your lovely, warm, lovely pen to go out into the buff bad world? But they all do eventually.
They do. And I was involved in some of the birds released in Kerry last year, and we released them out just on the strand. And within about 2 minutes, one of them took off immediately, soared up and flew around. You could see it flying around. It was just fantastic.
So how
fantastic.
Have the numbers been? You've been doing this for a few years. So have you had more eggs each year? Can you tell me how many eggs you did each year?
Last year, we got 36 eggs. Now, of those, there was about 5 of them were from abandoned nests, so they weren't very viable. So we hatched 29 and we released 27 of them back into the wild. So that's about 87% of the viable eggs, which would have been more than likely predated, that we've actually put back into the wild. That's a huge number.
And that's a huge number, given how few of the curlew will actually manage to breed successfully in the wild. So the head start really does what it says on the tin. It gives them a head start.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if we release 27 birds back into the wild, that's 27 chicks that probably would not have survived to that age if we hadn't intervened.
So when are you expecting delivery this year? When will you be hearing that they're nesting and that the eggs are coming?
Last year, the first eggs we got was on the 29th of April. So we would be expecting to get eggs pretty soon. But we've been preparing the incubation house here for the last 2 months. So we have to calibrate the incubators and check, make sure all the equipment that we have is up and ready to go. Behind the scenes, we've been working hard to get everything ready.
So you're actually taking the eggs from the most vulnerable habitats rather than the safer habitats, because they're the ones that need the most help and a head start.
Absolutely. There's no point in taking them from areas where the parents are going to rear the birds themselves. The whole idea of the head starting is the areas where the birds are most vulnerable is to try and save those eggs and bring them up to an age where they have that advantage that they can fly and they can avoid predators.
So that's your part of the life story of them, if you like. So when they go back into the wild, the trouble with the predators, the trouble with the habitats, that's not your bailiwick. You're here giving them a head start, taking the eggs, giving them back chicks. That's your job done.
That's correct, yeah. And like I say, we're just one small part in that. So there's a lot of other people involved in the actual sort of the predator control and the monitoring of the nests and talking to the farmers and getting farmers on board and the research, you know, ATU and UCD, they're involved in a lot of research, National Parks and Wildlife, and various other colleagues are involved in this project as well.
So you love what you do by the sound of things. Declan, it's great talking to you. Thank you so much for showing me around. It's just great.
Thank you very much, Anna.
Oh, the haunting cry, as Eric Dempsey described last Monday, the cry of the curlew ending. Aina's report about head starting at Fota Wildlife Park. More details on the website rte.ie/Mooney. Terry also did some reports which we'll hear in the coming weeks to celebrate World Curlew Day.